And at this point, I'm going to go to the video and show you that activity. This is about a 19 or 20 minute video, and it starts with us preparing for the flight and goes through to landing. So it'll show you a whole lot of the activities that we did on board it with those payloads that I just described, and it gives you a sense, I think, of what it's like to be in space. We got up about 4 hours before launch and donned the pressure suits that we were going to wear during launch. And that's these orange suits you see here. These provide high altitude protection in the event that we have to do a bailout at high altitude. So it's basically a pressure suit. We check the gloves, check the helmets, check the communication systems, and make sure that that's a bit better, yeah. And make sure that the suits have good integrity. At that point, we then walk out of the preparation building along the same pathway the Apollo astronauts walked and get in a bus that takes us for the 7 mile drive out to the launch pad. At the launch pad, we put on our parachutes, our communication helmets, crawl in the vehicle, strap in, and wait for 2 hours for the countdown of T0. At about 6 seconds before launch, the main engines are run up to full speed. They're ignited and burned full speed. If they pass temperature and pressure checks to make sure they're working properly, then the solid rocket boosters are ignited, and 8 large bolts that hold the whole assembly to the ground are exploded, and it lifts off. And it's really a rush. It really just carries you skyward incredibly quickly. At this point, the vehicle weighs about 5.5 million pounds. By the time it clears the launch tower, it's already doing 100 miles an hour, and it's burning fuel at a rate of 12 tons a second. As we climb up through the atmosphere, we actually throttle back the engines a bit so that we don't overstress the vehicle in the denser layers of the atmosphere. Once we climb higher, up to about 50,000 feet, we bring the throttles back up to full speed and climb on up. And it's really a fast ride. At about 2 minutes into the flight, the solid rocket boosters have expended all their fuel and they're jettisoned, as you see here, to be recovered under the parachutes. At that point, we're riding the main engines on the external tank for an 8.5 minute ride to orbit. Once we reach orbit, 8.5 minutes later, we're doing about 28,000 kilometers an hour. As soon as we get on orbit, we're weightless. First order of business is to open the payload bay doors. And this is a view looking from the flight deck into the payload bay. And you can see the starboard door being opened here as we're looking aft. And these doors are lined with radiator panels, so they provide cooling for the spacecraft when it's on orbit. So it's very important we get the doors open as quickly as possible. You see the starboard door being opened. In a moment, you'll see the port door. And I draw your attention to the structure in front here. This is the inflatable antenna experiment that I talked about before, and you'll see us deploying that shortly. But this is what we do. First thing you see of the view, of course, when you get on orbit is spectacular. And this is what it looked like. We were going over the Persian Gulf, heading down southeast over the Indian Ocean towards Australia. It was really a great sight to see it for the first time. We've only been in orbit a short time, but we have to take our suits off, and that's a bit of a challenge in zero gravity, trying to find our balance and so on. You can see what it's like, how you can move around. I had the responsibility of activating the Space Hab module that I talked about, and that's what I'm doing here. You can see I've gone into the airlock, I've opened the hatch here, and we go into the Space Hab module and make sure that it's all right, make sure that all the experiments and all the equipment in there has survived the launch process safely. One of the things we need to do on orbit is exercise a lot to offset some of the effects of weightlessness. And you see pilot Kurt Brown here setting up a cycle-ergometer. You can see it's a bit of a challenge to do these kinds of things when you're weightless. It's not as easy as it looks. But we use this exercise bike to keep our muscles conditioned. And this was on our first flight day, setting up all this equipment. We're preparing the whole crew cabin for 10 days on orbit. Next was flight day 2. What we did on flight day 2 was deploy this satellite that you see here. So what you're seeing is the remote manipulator arm coming down here towards the satellite. And on the satellite, there's this pin. And the arm has what we call a grapple fixture in it. And it comes down and grasps that pin and snares it and forms a rigid connection to the satellite. And that's how we lift the satellite up out of the payload bay. We unlatch it and then can lift it up. And we do this from the aft flight deck with hand controllers, little joysticks basically, and you fly the arm down and grab it and then pull the satellite up. And now that's what we're doing here. We're just latching onto the satellite. Here we're lifting it up out of the payload bay. This is a view from the back looking to the front. We're actually up in these windows here, looking out these windows, operating this arm, as you can see here. And then we lifted it up high above the orbiter. This path was actually over Egypt. This is the Nile River over Egypt here. And here you can see the tail of the orbiter. Once we knew that the satellite was working correctly, we sent it some commands to initiate its pre-programmed sequences, and then we released it from the arm. That actually happened during a night pass. Remember, in space you get a night pass 16 times a day. One every 90 minutes you see a sunrise and sunset. So here we are. This is just after sunset. There's the line, the sunset there, and you can see the arm has been pulled away from the satellite. And what we're going to do, once we get free, back away from the satellite, we fired some jets to move the orbiter off to a safe distance from the satellite so it could go through its pre-programmed sequence. And that's what you see starting here. Here's the satellite. Now you watch, you'll see this balloon-like structure pop out of it there. Now this was made of silver mylar, sort of a plastic material. And it was very large. Once it popped out, then we started a sequence to pump gas into it. Now what this is I remind you, is going to be a radar dish like a canopy with three legs coming down the side like a tripod to simulate a radar reflecting dish, so that you can see the three legs of it here, and this is going to be what will be the dish of the radar reflector, or the canopy of it. This all took place about 170 miles above the Earth. Okay, here's the inflation sequence beginning. You can see gas was just pumped into that leg. It's a bit like pumping water into a fire hose, the same kind of effect. In a moment, you'll see the other legs inflate. There's the second one, and a third one now. This satellite actually carried its own video camera on board. In one of the scenes that follows, you'll see the view of this whole sequence as if you were sitting on the satellite looking out, watching it. It's black and white, but you can see the view of this whole sequence as if you were sitting right there watching it. And now you can see the canopy unfurling. Now this is a very large structure too. This is about 30 meters long, and the canopy is about 15 meters across, about the size of a tennis court. So this is a very, very big structure. You can see that as it inflates, it causes a lot of gyrations on the satellite, but the satellite actually had some systems on board to stabilize those out, which it does in a moment. There, it's slowly settling down into this large structure. Okay, this is the view on board as all that material is pushed out. This is what you'd see if you were sitting on board and all that material is being pushed out. And the reason this view is nice is because you see the Earth. That's really why I wanted to show it. You see the limb of the Earth there in the background. That's what it really looks like from space. Okay, this is what the antenna looked like when it was fully inflated. This large, beautiful silver mirror floating just about 70 meters away from us. It was really an impressive sight, very beautiful to look at. We actually will jettison this satellite from the antenna in one of the following scenes, and we go back and get the satellite, but we don't get the antenna. In the next view, you see a view of the orbiter going past. This is the view on board the satellite, seeing the Endeavour firing its jets as it's tracking across space behind the antenna. And we're up inside that vehicle somewhere. Okay, in the next scene, we'll show the jettison, and you want to look at the canopy, and you'll see the impulse of the jettison. Look at the circular dish. Bang, there it goes. It's like hitting a big 15-meter diameter drum. And now you see the little satellite here is separated. And it was the jolt of that separation which caused that canopy to ripple like that. And we will go back and retrieve this satellite because it's got some onboard information on it. It's got the video on it that you saw, for one thing. But we didn't go back and retrieve this because if you think about it, it would be nearly impossible to try and fold this structure up in zero gravity in space and bring it back. So we let it go, and it actually deorbited and burned up in the atmosphere a couple of days later. But we did have to go back and get the satellite, and that was a fairly tricky prospect because you have to fly up close to it and come in very carefully towards it and then reach out and grab it with a manipulator arm. And here you can see we're doing that. This is a view through an optical alignment sight we used to help guide the orbiter. And as we came in close, we then brought the remote manipulator arm up to the satellite. The satellite is on the left here, and grappled it. And this shows Marc Garneau performing that fairly delicate operation on the aft flight deck of the orbiter. You can see how crowded it gets up there. And this is the target he uses, which is on the satellite. This cross here is what he uses to fly the arm in and go in and grasp it. And you have to do it very carefully because you don't want to bump the satellite, because if you bump it, it's going to start tumbling. And if it starts tumbling, it's never going to stop. And you'll never be able to get it. So you get one shot at this and you have to get it right. And you see him how he's carefully brought it in, and then he'll form a rigid connection so that we can bring the satellite home. This weighs about 500 kilograms, so this is no easy task. Once we had it, we rotated it and turned around and looked at it to make sure that it had good integrity, that there was no damage to it, and it was indeed going to be safe to bring it back and put it in the payload bay. And here you can see it's been berthed down into the payload bay on the arm and latched, ready to bring it home. It's a busy time on the flight deck. This is the flight deck of the orbiter. We're all up there with our various responsibilities. And after we did that, we cranked the arm up into the shape of a 7 here and used a split screen just to remind you that this is indeed mission STS-77. People on the ground got a kick out of that. Okay, this is the second satellite that we deployed. You see, here it goes, a small one. We deploy this down towards the surface of the Earth. And remember, what we have to do here is we're going to try and track this satellite and see how it performs on orbit over a 3 or 4 day period. This is just not long after the deployment sequence. When you're looking down towards the Earth, you can see it end on, crossing coastline. And this is an interesting view. This is crossing the satellite crossing the west coast of Africa. This is Morocco. This is the entrance to the Mediterranean up here, and Portugal and Spain up above. At this point, we had to do some fairly careful flying of the orbiter because we wanted to maintain a controlled position relative to that satellite and fly around it. And so we needed to know where the satellite was. And one of the aids we used to do that was this handheld laser that you see here. We just used this laser to measure how far the satellite is from us and how fast it's moving. And we used that information to tell us, in conjunction with these laptop computers that you see here, how to fire the jets of the orbiter to bring the orbiter into just the right point. It's a fairly tricky operation, and these are the kinds of aids that we use to do it. And after 3 days, the satellite had indeed stabilized and into a good orbit. That's just a view of it during a night pass. Okay, some of the other activities on the flight. I mentioned we had the Space Hab module. And this is the Space Hab module. You see the space, the volume we have in there. This is Marc Garneau operating one of the experiments in there. This is a crystal growth experiment in doing this in zero-G. Here's myself and mission specialist Dan Bursch operating some experiments. You see how easily you can move in zero gravity. You just sort of pull yourself to where you want to be and you'll just drift and float right there. Now, this was connected by a tunnel through to the mid-deck of the orbiter, which exists just below the flight deck. And this is the mid-deck region of the orbiter. And here you can see Mario Runco activating one of the experiments we have. I draw your attention to these bags behind him. These are the sleeping bags we use. You see, we just got them on the wall there. And sleeping was really easy in space. You just crawl into a bag and Velcro your head to this pillow and go to sleep. And this is a little bit of amateur science that we did here. This is just shows you what it's like to be in zero gravity. You can just take a drop of water here, which is what we've done, and we've actually got a bubble of air inside it. And it just floats in front of you. It's really a wonderful sight. I mean, we could have played with this for hours. Dan Bursch had some other ideas. That's what zero gravity is like. Okay, this is typical mealtime in zero gravity, on the mid-deck once again. You can see us sitting around here, and John Casper, my commander, is upside down here. Of course, you could sit in any orientation you want. It didn't matter. You could have a lot of fun with it. Have to eat the food very carefully, though. Okay, these are just some shots of day-to-day living on the space shuttle. It's the flight deck. Here's myself operating a laptop on the aft flight deck. Gives you an idea of what it's like inside. I mentioned exercise. Exercise is very important to keep the muscles well conditioned because you're not using them in weightlessness. And so we would spend time on that bicycle every day to help conditioning. And Mario Runco here is just stowing a vacuum cleaner he's used to do some housework. And this is sleeping. Like I said, it's really easy. You just have an eye shade because you remember getting a sunrise every 90 minutes. So you use an eye shade and just put yourself in this and go to sleep. It's very comfortable, very easy to sleep. Your arms float up a bit, but it feels great. And this is on the mid-deck. Dan Bursch is looking at the challenging problem of putting contact lenses in zero gravity. Okay, now this is some of the views we had. This should look familiar to some of you, I think. This is actually coming across the Indian Ocean, Exmouth Bay and Sharks Bay, the west coast of Australia, coming over Western Australia. Perth will actually be somewhere down here. This is a view of a night pass, actually, over Florida. This is what you see at night. You see the city lights, but you see these flashes too. These are electrical storms, and we could see some of these electrical storm front systems with lightning flashes stretching 1,000 miles off into the distance. And I remember one night coming over Melbourne, and I could see the lights of Melbourne, Sydney, and Canberra all at one time. And the only reason I couldn't see any more lights was because of cloud cover. This is coming over California, southeast over some of the arid zones of Mexico. That was Baja, California. After 10 days on orbit, it was time for us to come home. So we had to close the payload bay doors that we'd opened after we got on orbit. You see that going on here. You can see the Space Hab module in the foreground there. And then we had to go and put on our launch entry suits, the orange pressure suits that we wore during launch, because we need to wear these during entry. Now, in microgravity or zero gravity, this is really a challenge. But it's made worse because after you've been on orbit for about 10 days, your spine has actually expanded a little bit, and so the suit's a really tight squeeze. Then we fire some jets and plunge down into the atmosphere, and the vehicle is traveling at 25 times the speed of sound, so it gets red hot. And these are the bursts of ionized gas you see out the window as we're plunging into the atmosphere at this incredible speed. Gravity just doesn't suddenly increase when you do this. It slowly increases, like you can see here. This is about a 30th of gravity playing around with a cue card. And that's what happens. It slowly comes on as you come into the atmosphere. At about 50,000 feet, the commander takes manual control. Up until that point, it's been automatic flying. But here, the commander takes manual control and flies this circle and approaches and lines up with the runway. This is an unpowered descent. At this point, you are the world's heaviest glider. This vehicle weighs about 100 tons, and you're coming in at 300 knots. At about 5,000 feet above the ground, you pre-flare to slow the vehicle down. At 500 feet, you flare some more to slow it some more, and you deploy the landing gear as you cross the runway threshold. And this is landing at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, same place we launched from 10 days earlier. Once the gear's down, you come across the runway, you touch down, all flown manually. This is a one-time landing. If you make a mistake, there's no going around. Touchdown speed's quite high. It's 200 knots, and that's very hard on the brakes. It's hard on the tires, too. In fact, the tires are only good for one landing, then they have to be changed. So to save the brakes, we deploy this parachute out the back, which slows the vehicle down. It also slows down the nose coming down onto the ground. And then we roll out down the runway, slowly decelerating. When we get slow enough, then we apply the brakes. And as we slow down below about 60 knots, we actually release the parachute because we don't want it to foul or interfere with these rocket engine nozzles back here because we're going to be using them again. And about an hour after that, we come out of the vehicle and walk around, and our mission, sadly, is over. And with that, I will conclude the presentation.